I'm author and athlete Brad Kearns. Welcome to the Be Rad Podcast, where we explore ways to pursue peak performance with passion throughout life. Visit bradkearns.com for great resources on healthy eating, exercise, and lifestyle. And here we go with the show.
If you're like a marathon runner and you just love it and you're super digged and you're running and you're running and you're running and you're like super great, you're going to get a different response physiologically if you're like, I kind of hate this. Just because your mental shift changed doesn't mean you're going to buy into that physiological. Your nerves, your taste buds, and some of the way your microbiome is set up might take some time to get away from the big salad and the broccoli. And I look at lifestyle as thoughts, emotions, food, activities, relationships. Your lifestyle will have a corresponding body.
Get ready, start your engines. It is time for the Hurricane, episode number 5. Yes, my good friend and frequent podcast guest, Dave Rossi, author of the wonderful Underground Sensation book, The Imperative Habit, which you can order right now on Amazon, or by the time the show's over, you'll be compelled to go pop for that book, because we are going to get hit with some awesome insights and cause for reflection in this fast-moving show, as always. If I didn't properly introduce Dave, or you haven't heard the previous shows, he is an ordinary Silicon Valley businessman in the construction industry, but he's become quite a guru in spirituality, has a really popular Instagram following. His book has been very well received. And in his personal life, he's come from living and breathing the great successes and the great failures. And so he has a wonderful, fresh perspective on all this kind of stuff and what's important in life. He lost 50 pounds and has kept it off for many years. And so he has a great interest in weight loss and healthy living, eating, exercise. But he comes at it from a different direction, and that is from the mindset component that we often forget about when we get obsessed with the logistics and talking about our carb count and our ketogenic strategies and the pros and cons of this food or this workout or that workout. So we're going to go like high level here, back up a bit, and figure out the role of mindset in the progress toward our goals and dreams, or the lack of progress. So all kinds of topics covered in this show. One of them is the placebo effect and how it's real and how powerful it is. And that's the power of the mind convincing you that something's going to work. We talk about the common modern affliction of succumbing to the instant gratification, the dopamine triggers. I talked about this at length in my show with Dr. Anna Lemke, author of Dopamine Nation, and how it's essential to convert from that reactive position where we're just going along, bouncing along through the day, wondering if we're going to succumb to the many temptations around. And so Dave talks about the power of converting to choice and making a choice that you want to, for example, live a healthy life. And once you made that choice, then all the other behavior patterns flow gracefully downstream from that, rather than having to tap into willpower day after day, hour after hour, to make sure you're not tempted when they bring the dessert plate around. So it's woven in with some spiritual and psychological mindset insights, as well as the practicality of energy balance and some of the things I've been talking about on recent shows, and essentially how to overcome your reliance on external things to make you happy and instead cultivate an inner happiness by basically removing the things that make you unhappy. And in doing so, you can make that choice to lose excess body fat, and that pulls it all together for a tee up. Here we go with the Hurricane, Dave Rossi. None other than Dave Rossi is back for, could this be the fifth time? I don't know. I'm losing count, man, but I'm so glad to connect with you. I miss you, man. We've been busy here. We have to be on Zoom instead of in person. What a bummer, but we got always plenty of things to talk about.
Yeah, I always find we end up talking more outside of the podcast, and then we keep saying, I wish this was recorded. So funny. It's such good stuff.
Yeah, never again. We gotta share it here.
Yeah, so I mean, this kind of came up because you had some questions you kind of wanted to ask me.
Yeah, so this Energy Balance, Jay Feldman podcast, he's going to be a guest on my show shortly. And we don't have to get into the extreme details of the message, but he presents a really beautiful big picture argument for the idea that if we start stacking all this cool stuff, all this hormesis, as the term has been bantered around very popularly, or biohacking, a lot of biohacking might fall into this category too, where we're jumping in the freezing cold lake or the chest freezer because we're supposed to get all these incredible health benefits. Same with fasting, same with keto, low carb, and of course, going to the gym and putting your muscles under load, or going out to the running track and doing my high jump practice, and all that stuff's beautiful. But then I sit back and wonder, gee, if I'm stacking these stress factors like being 57 years old and trying to pretend I'm at a high school track practice, doing the workout, trying to recover, trying to lead a hectic, high-stress modern life, and I'm doing some dietary intervention and restriction that's, starving my cells of energy in the name of health, of course, because we know that fasting prompts all these wonderful metabolic opportunity and optimizations. But is it possible to overdo it? I think it most certainly is. And now we're going to open up the conversation to think, okay, how am I going to chart this course individually rather than say, and I torched my childhood friend the other day because he said, hey, look, Brad, I know all this carnivore and this and that you're talking about is great, but really it's all about everything in moderation. And I said, no, it's not, because we live in the fattest, sickest population in the history of humanity. So if you want to have a moderate approach to life, and I called him out, I'm like, dude, you're the hardest working, hardest driving, most competitive mofo, a very successful, prominent figure. I go, you're nothing about moderation, and you never have been, dating back to, your childhood when you tried to outsprint me to win the fun run. Okay, Dave Rossi's going to weigh in now, people.
Well, I'm not even sure how you weigh in and all of that. It was so great and so eloquent. I think that everything in moderation is right, except it's a little bit misunderstood. I think everything that your brain thinks is good for you equals moderation. And so, listening to the Jay Feldman, Ben Greenfield podcast is that hormesis or hormetic response, or I do really tough things and I assign a really fancy name, Greek name to it, basically is what your brain thinks is hormetic or hormesis. And it's kind of like the placebo effect. So if you're like a marathon runner and you just love it and you're super digged and you're running and you're running and you're running and you're like super great, you're going to get a different response physiologically if you're like, I kind of hate this. I don't know why I'm doing this anymore. Do I really hate these marathons? Why am I doing another marathon? Your mindset is going, to me, in my experience, your mindset is going to determine, just like a placebo does with other situations, your mind is going to tell you if that activity is hormetic, not that the activity is hormetic.
Uh-huh.
And I think that definition in your subconscious mind changes as well with lots of different factors. It's a very complicated, too complicated to even understand how the placebo works. But, the placebo effect is real, right? All new drugs go through a placebo study. They do a double blind study, and they do a double blind study because the placebo is real. Your brain thinks a little white pill works. And so in 18% of the cases, your mind thinks it works. Now, in one setting, one person might take the sugar pill and it cures cholesterol, but in a different setting, it may not. There's something in that setting that's so minutely different that triggers a different placebo in the same person. So what I'm saying is that there's so many factors that relate in your mind that helps your body define what is a hormetic response and what's not.
Oh, that's beautiful. And there's research on rats
And also on cold exposure in humans, where if it's a surprise, then the human stress response is extreme versus when they're, you know, this is Wim Hof stuff where he tells the people, guess what? You are going to go into this freezing water and you're going to be fine and I'm going to help you and you're going to breathe through it and it's going to be a miracle. And so they have to believe and therefore they're able to do it. And the rats, when they're able to time their exposure to the stressor or control it, they fare much better. So when we have these surprise features like your hot water heater breaks and you have a cold shower, it's brutal. But if you're going to have three friends come over and you guys are going to do a cold shower, session, and you're all excited about it and you've been talking about it, it has a whole different potential. Same with the marathon example. I love it.
Well, I think it's really difficult for people to always compare rats to humans because in rats, what they're doing is they're testing environmental stressors or physiological stressors. In the human brain, we have emotional stressors. We have mindset stressors. And so a mouse isn't going to go, do I really want to do this? Do I not want to do this? Am I going to be thinner if I do this? Oh, am I the great if I do this? I really hate doing this. This is really monotonous. You know, my spouse hates when I do this. The mouse doesn't have that kind of cognition to create an emotional stressor. The mouse doesn't have the ability to imagine reality, to imagine what things might be like in the future that creates the same physiological response. We all know that stress, like I can't get this deal, can create all kinds of physiological responses. Okay. So our mind can create high blood pressure, skin irritation, skin rashes, heart palpitations, panic attacks, shortness of breath. Emotional responses can create physiological changes. And so in all of these studies that people do, which is very difficult, whenever I see a study, I say, well, what's their cortisol level when they did this study? Or how stressed are they when they did this study? Because there's a correlation to emotional mental stress to physiological responses. And so everything that Jay and Ben talked about, I found difficult to wrap my head around because there isn't the mental component to those things. Mm-hmm. Because face it, if you love some of these things that you do, it's not going to be a hormetic response because you love it and it's enjoyable. You might get endorphins. I mean, the common societal view is that jumping in cold water is really tough. And then fasting is also really tough. And keto is really tough. And running lots of calorie-restricted diets and lots of running is tough. Okay, but for Brad Kearns, you like eat this for breakfast. You're like, this is great. This is fun. I'm getting in shape. I love it. I love experimenting. And you might get endorphins and somebody else is going to get a catabolic response from exactly the same activity. And that's what was wrong with that talk. Is that all things aren't uniform in terms of physiological responses, and all things aren't uniform in your own life. Your own mindset can change those physiological responses.
Well, I'm thinking of the workplace, especially where you have, you know, the columns of cubicles, and the people are doing the exact same thing, and the person in the first one hates their job, the person in the second one, same exact responsibilities, they love their job and it's a completely different experience. And they're probably energized all day long and energized at the end of the day versus the person who's, you know, decided that this is a bummer.
Well, in all the studies that you see, you know, the J curve for a hormetic response, you know, when someone's doing that, there's a conversation they have with themselves. Like I tell my son, you know, I make him walk the track and, you know, he's a big kid. He hates to walk. He's a swimmer. He plays water polo. And he's like, oh, why am I doing this? And I'm like, look, okay, you can tell yourself a story in your head. Why are you doing this? This sucks. I hate this. My dad's making me walk. And that's one story. And you're still going to walk. Or you could tell yourself, this is good for me. I'm doing something good for me. This is really enjoyable. I like this. And you're still going to walk. Okay. The walking is not going to contribute the majority of the physiological responses. What he's going through his mind has a very large effect on what chemicals are going to be produced to create that J curve of response. And And I could see his shoulders hunched over and his head down, and I hate this, and I don't want to do this, and why am I here? And that's creating all kinds of stress hormones, which is a higher level of order for your mind to work on than it is for some casual walking in terms of a physiological response. It's life or death when you know fear. Your body doesn't know the difference between fear from a tiger or fear from I fucking hate doing this, right? It's still a higher order response for your brain to deal with.
It's reminded me of my broccoli and salad experience, Dave. I have to tell you this, after I listened to Saladino in early 2019, so that's 3 years ago, he really captivated me with his message. It was very well presented, and this idea that these the plant foods need not be the centerpiece of the diet.
Yeah.
They don't have as much nutrition as more animal-based eating patterns. And, you know, I listened to the show over and over. I talked to him. I got him on my podcast. We spent some time together personally. And, you know, he really convinced me that he was onto something. And from that point, you know, I've been a lifelong enthusiast of big, delicious salads with all the crunchy vegetables and the sliced tomatoes and the bell peppers and the nuts and the seeds and the salad dressing. And same with a steaming plate of broccoli served with my steak or whatever.
Yeah.
And I would look at these same foods and I lost my appetite for them just because my mind had shifted to the concept that these aren't the extreme health superfoods that I've believed them to be. I no longer believe that. And they're maybe not the greatest tasting if they're not in that same category. And same with like a junk food. If everyone said tomorrow that Snicker bars are super healthy, I might have a more taste for them than I do now. Whereas if I bit into one and tried it, I think it was too sweet and I'm habituated away from it. I know it's terrible for me. I don't even want to take a bite of it. But it was a really weird experience because, you know, I look forward to a salad for decades, and now all of a sudden I'd have my fork in hand and I couldn't even stab the spinach leaves because now I've learned that they have oxalates in them and it could interfere with my digestion and nutrient assimilation.
Well, you know, I think something very profound happens to somebody when they don't look at food as a hunger suppressant or a pleasure center any longer. For a lot of people, food brings pleasure. Food does release a serotonin and dopamine response. Certainly, you know, the food that we're habituated to, like sugars and Snickers bars and things like that. But when you don't look at food to suppress hunger and you don't look at food to bring you pleasure and you look at food to bring you nutrients, then certainly the game changes substantially. And I think for someone like you, who, you know, there's so many studies either way. I believe everything Sal says, but I also believe a lot of things that the vegan population or vegetarian population says. And again, I'm back to, it depends on the person and it depends on the person's at that moment. It's not one size fits all. You know, it will change based on how your mind decides to, and there's a, just because your mental shift changed, doesn't mean you're going to buy into that physiological. Your nerves, your taste buds, and some of the way your microbiome is set up might take some time to get away from the big salad and the broccoli. But if your mind's there, everything's going to kind of follow it, right? I mean, eventually your taste buds will change and your microbiome will change and you'll start eating more and more meat. But I believe these studies show, you know, both sides of the equation. And so, yeah, okay, Sal, you're right. And okay, yeah, Sal, you're not right. I think it just depends on the person. There isn't one size that fits all. But what does fit all is what you want to believe in and what you do believe in and where you want to go with that lifestyle. And, you know, Ben said something in his podcast. I love this. He said, Ben wants the benefits without the stresses.
Wants the what?
Ben said, I want the benefits without the stressors. I want the benefits of the stressors. And it doesn't really work that way. You know, you can't have a shortcut to get the body that you want. And look, Ben's got a great physique. He's certainly in the healthy zone, albeit he's doing lots of things to get there, lots of discipline and things like that, that a lot of people just aren't going to have the wherewithal to do. But you have to pick a lifestyle. You have to pick what you're happy with. And you have to want that. If you don't want it, then you're depriving yourself and it's a fight.
Yeah. Yeah. And in fact, we can shortcut all kinds of things. We can hijack the traditional process that we've experienced throughout human evolution, where we had to work hard to get our food and we had to hunt and we had to gather and celebrate. And now we can just push buttons. I had Dr. Anna Lemke on the show, author of Dopamine Nation, your neighbor there in the in the Bay Area. And she's pointing out how you know, this counterbalance of pleasure and pain in the brain, when we endure something difficult and struggle and persevere through challenge, whether it's a cognitive challenge, trying to write our first essay, or trying to finish a marathon, we get a counterbalancing effect of sustained pleasure. And so when we just hit the dopamine triggers where we don't have to make sufficient effort, so we can sit down and, like Dr. John Gray says, the evil combination of porn and video games for the young modern male has taken away or has satisfied their two main biological drives, which are to conquer one's environment and to seek a mate. And so now, without any effort, they can do that. They can hit those dopamine pathways day after day after day, and they lose their resolve to go and persevere and struggle and try to formulate a real relationship or do something out.
Yeah,
out
but of those the, are yeah. those are very biological body responses. When we should try to get beyond the body.
How so?
Like the woman you just talked about, Doc mentioned about the biological response for dopamine, and also Dr. David Gray about, hey, we want to conquer our environment. We really don't have to conquer our environment like we think we do. We have to make good choices to drive our life the places we want to go without the biological urges that push us to do shit that doesn't really help our life. Mm. Urges to eat, urges to say things to people incorrectly that we don't want to say, urges to do all kinds of things that really don't help our cause. Now, in a Harvard study with silent meditation, 8 weeks of dedicated silent meditation actually created neuroplasticity to dampen the effect of the dopamine reward center in the human brain. So when you remove pleasure from the equation, your choices are going to change. So a lot of the urges that we have are for pleasure. We push for alcohol for pleasure. We push for different relationships for pleasure. We push for conquering our environment for pleasure. These are all biological things that the supercomputer in our head and the mechanism of this carbon suit lives out. And they have all these components, and all these components do these things, right? You eat this, you get this response, okay? But at some point, I'm advocating getting out of the body and saying, hey, I don't really need to have a conquering dopamine effect to conquer my environment and get dopamine rush. How about I just do what I want to do and do that without having a biological urge, but a spiritual urge or an intuitive urge or a lofty aspiration urge, like helping other people or helping myself or helping the planet, or have some higher power drive our choices rather than biology driving our choices. The most common biology that we see is athletics and food. We're hungry, we eat. So I always advocate not, when you fast, you know, people don't realize that we are a bit like Pavlov's dogs, right? When we don't eat, we train our body to be hungry. We train our body to release ghrelin at a certain time, okay? So when we fast and we just gut it out and we just don't eat and our body releases ghrelin, our body begins to go through a starvation mode and says, hey, this sucks. I don't like this. What's happening to me, okay? And I learned this in this book by a guy named Dr. Mike Brown, who wrote a book called Quantitative Medicine. And he says, don't do long walks because your body thinks it's migrating and it's going to store fat. Well, it might. It might not also, too. It all depends what your mind thinks you're doing. And if you fast too quickly, meaning long periods of time without working into it, you don't give the ghrelin response time to change like a Pavlovian dog. You want to not fast until you get hungry, wait a half an hour, and then eat. And the next time, fast longer. Wait till the ghrelin hits. Don't eat when the ghrelin hits because that reinforces the power of the hormone. And then you eat after that hormone goes away. And you keep lengthening your fast. So the fast is never difficult. You never have to push past points of pain or ghrelin or rationalizations to eat. You want your body to feel that this is acceptable and it's not traumatic. It's not hormetic. You don't have to make it bad. Does that make sense?
Oh my gosh, yeah. And it's the perfect parallel to fitness endeavors, because when we push past that point and go beyond our limits, we have all kinds of feedback afterward that's biological.
Yeah.
And it turns into a negative experience, and we start to dread it, and we go down the slippery slope into, you know, attrition or what have you. So if you can, I guess that kind of reminds me of what Ben was getting at, is really we want to have the minimal biological stress and, you know, achieve the desired outcomes without having to suffer through it. And possibly, maybe you're arguing that we also can transcend these urges such that we have a more, you know, a balanced perspective. When we do something that's good for us, we don't always have to get this big dopamine high. We can go out and enjoy each other's company and be silent for 15 minutes holding hands on a walk, rather than constantly trying to impress your second date with more war stories from your workplace achievements or what have you. You know, you can settle into an experience that is beautiful on the surface without having to jack it up and dress it up and take a selfie.
Well, yeah, in my book, I talk about this a little bit, about your goals. Now, if your goals have the intention of gain, and that's a very loaded word, because people say the reason why they're changing is to gain. But when you're like, I like the example you used about a date. If your intention is to impress them, then the intention isn't authentically pure, and you're going to get a different type of response than if the intention was, I just want to get to know you, not know what you do or where you live or where you like, what you like to eat, but to really know who you are. Those are different intentions to say, what do you like to do? Where do you like to travel? What do you like to eat? What's your favorite restaurant? What time do you go to bed? What music do you like? You know, that's different than what moves you. What do you find beautiful? What are some of your most profound experiences? What's something you wanted to do that you were never able to achieve? The intentions behind getting to know somebody versus getting to know about somebody is different than the intention also of, I want to impress them. And these intentions drive our physiological responses in our mind. So, and the reason why I'm telling you this is because that's the toll tell of when you're doing something physiologically best for you, when the intention is really pure. When you know, look, I know you well enough to know that you do all the crazy stuff you did because you love it. I mean, you really kind of do. I mean, you were thin and in shape and a professional athlete before Saladino told you to stop eating vegetables, right? But you have this drive to always want to be at the top and explore more and more things. And that's very attractive to you. And that's a very pure passion. You don't have any intentions that derail you from, I just want to look fit at the beach. It's all I care about is fit at the beach, right? And those intentions make your mind follow along with what you want to do. They're in alignment.
Right, right.
And you get the corresponding body to that alignment. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I guess it's, you know, an appreciation of the process, the journey, and releasing the attachment of your self-esteem or your happiness to the outcome or the end destination of your endeavors.
Right. When you're attached to the body's wishes, I need to eat. I need to eat. Body says eat. Body says eat. I need to eat. I'm hungry. It's just a fucking hormone. It's a hormone that's been trained to release when you typically haven't eaten for a certain period of time. It's not like I need more energy to go work out or I haven't eaten in 10 hours. A lot of people don't eat for 10 hours. It's your body, it's your training, and it's a hormonal release. Let's not get crazy with it. It's just a hormone, right?
Yeah, it passes in 20 minutes, Dr. Kate Shanahan says. And
right.
When I've done that cold therapy experiment to use cold to accelerate fat loss, you have to work through that hunger spike, because you get a reliable hunger spike after getting cold, because your body wants to do everything to rewarm, including trigger appetite. And if you can ride it out for 20 minutes, then you get the accelerated fat burning benefits.
If you're not stressed out about work and your body's releasing cortisol because you're late for work because you spent too much time in the cold tub. I mean, it's not that simple. I mean, there are physiological proof to that, to those, you know, the way in which the cells work and the body works and the exposure to cold works. But there are also other layering things that the mind can create that can change some of those things as well. And what I'm saying is that, you know, when you get beyond the body, when you get beyond the hunger and you begin to make choices that are right for you, that you really like, or that you want to change, then everything changes for you. The physiology changes, the you're converting from willpower to choice. You know, willpower is when you think you want to, but your body doesn't want to, so then you have to fight against it. And so, you know, it's stressful to fight willpower, but you don't really want to do it. That's why it's called willpower. I mean,
so willpower, what you just said there is interesting. I never looked at it that way. Willpower is doing something that we don't really want to, or not doing something that we really want to. And so we have to ring the bell and call upon willpower because we'd rather sit on the couch.
Yeah. And willpower gets stronger when we're stressed or tired or
what's weaker?
An argument, or we sat in traffic, or you know, whatever.
Weakens when we get
It weakens. Like we lose that fight. You know, it's a losing fight. But you know, I always say, you know, if someone asked me, "Do you want a donut or not?" and that was the only question posed to me, because I love donuts, right? Love donuts. Okay, so it's fried, and it's gluten, and it's sugar.
And besides that, it's okay,
right? But the real question, the answer to that question is typically, yeah, I love the donut. It's so great, but not having it. But the question really is, do I want to be fit or not? Does a donut fit in my lifestyle or not? And that's a different question, because one of them, if I isolate the question, do I want a donut or not? That's usually a yes, I would enjoy that. Okay. But when you look at the question differently and say, do I want to be fit or not? It doesn't take any willpower to choose what I want. Yeah, I want to be fit. That's very, very easy answer. I would like to be fit. Very, very simple. I want to be fit. Easy question, easy answer. Doesn't take any willpower to get that.
To get to that answer.
To get to that answer. It takes no willpower to get the life that I want. Now, there's a degree to that, because it's not black or white. And what I'm suggesting is that when you find the right question to ask yourself, it's a choice of what you want to do and what you don't want to do versus willpower, which is you're trying to fight against something that you naturally already want. And it's a fight.
Yeah. So. I guess when we break it down, you know, we'll leave this podcast motivated, inspired, focused as usual after talking to Dave. And then we're going to crack on the fourth day, or something's going to come up that's getting us out of choice and back into, I guess, reactivity and biological drives. Fatigue and stress are kicking in, and all of a sudden we forgot about our choice, or we're not properly.
And that's okay. That happens. You know, that happens. The most dangerous thing is to actually engage a stress response, which is guilt. Because now we're engaging cortisol again, and guilt and low self-esteem, and we're talking badly about ourselves, and that's not going to help. So you use those situations as an example to learn. You just don't go from the lifestyle that I live and the lifestyle that you live from zero to that lifestyle. It takes practice to slowly begin to have the ability to feel comfortable with some of the things that you and I like to do. You just don't do it. And it takes time to readjust the taste buds in our mouths and the discussions in our mind. And the results help a lot. I mean, when people don't get results, then they drop it, and they use results as that motivator. And I can tell you with meditation for me that, you know, you don't get results very fast. That's why it's very difficult to get people to do silent meditation, because they want to sweat. They want to feel the pain when they stretch in yoga. They want to have something hard, and they want to feel accomplished. When when training your mind to have more power of choice, to dampen the risk reward or the reward center in your brain, remove that dopamine circuitry that gives you rewards, that takes some time to dampen. When you remove that through meditation, you just, I call it your I choose muscle. You're strengthening your muscle to say, I don't really need that for pleasure. I don't really have to have that.
Like, I used to have dessert. Yeah.
Like, I used to have dessert every night. I was in fine shape, didn't cause any weight gain. I would just eat dessert like every night. I didn't eat gluten, so it's cheesecake or ice cream or something like that. And then I'm thinking, you know, the only reason why I eat this is because it just gives me a rush of happiness. And I'm plenty happy with lots of other things. I really don't need a happiness rush after dinner.
It's especially just, if it conflicts with your choice to be healthy and.
I know sugar is bad for me. There's lots of evidence about what sugar does to your body. My weight didn't change because I stopped eating dessert. It wasn't like this big profound effect in my life, but it really was a spiritual choice to realize that I derive happiness from lots of other places than ice cream. And it really is better for my body. And I don't see a lot of physical changes, and that's okay. I don't need to. I'm not doing it for the physical change. I'm doing it because I know it'll clean my blood and clean my liver, and not eating sugar will provide all kinds of other benefits that I can't see. So I don't need that pleasure. Yeah.
That's a good one, because we can't see ourselves 30 years from now, but we can, you know, get some hints if we ignore the future consequences of our present instant gratification actions.
Yeah. And I mean, I really enjoyed that speech, that podcast with Brett, Jay, and Ben. I mean, they're both so into helping people, and it's so incredible to hear all their knowledge, throwing all their knowledge around. And yet, I wish someone would talk about meditation and the power that the mind has, because the mind creates all those physiological responses, 100% of them. They're just hacking their body into doing things that tell their mind to do these things, right? It's like, you know, you want to get the benefits of fasting, so eat these types of foods that trigger these different types of things that give you the results of fasting, but you don't actually have to fast. And I mean, that's cool, and I think it's great, and if it makes it easier for people, that's cool too. But there's a lot easier way, which is just try to balance. And I hate to use the phrase we started with, everything in moderation, but it's everything that actually works for you. And that will change with time. What works for you, you could stagnate, and you have to keep on pushing yourself a little bit, a little bit, a little bit. And enjoy that process. I mean, if you're just looking for the end game, then you're really missing the whole point of all this, right?
Right. It is enjoyable to take incremental steps forward. It's just a fantastic, you know, opportunity to celebrate every day.
Yeah.
If you are ditching your dessert habit, or in the process of dropping excess body fat, and you're a pound lighter, even though you want to be 20 pounds lighter, I don't think a lot of people have trouble there celebrating and having that smile and that sense of satisfaction. But, you know, the ability to sustain it, I think we're up against a lot of cultural forces that probably throw us off, and that desire for instant gratification and getting away from choice and honoring impulse, possibly because we've been worn down and are tired and stressed.
Well, that's probably why most people gain the weight back, and they don't sustain it, because they don't enjoy the journey. They just do it for the results. And then once they get to the results, they say, oh, I'm here now. And then they slowly begin to revert back to their old ways. You know, that just proves the point that you have to enjoy the journey that you're taking to get to that end game. Because when you enjoy that journey and you pick that lifestyle, and you don't have to pick the lifestyle all of the sudden, you have to take it slowly. And let me add something to this. I discovered this with myself. Again, I do equate a weight loss a lot like the placebo as well. And I have lots of data sets for that. But, you know, for me personally, I would gain weight when I would run. I would restrict calories, and I'd count calories, and I'd run, and I'd gain weight. And I went because running was difficult for me. I'm not a natural runner. I don't run that fast. And it was hard. My body found a cortisol stress response to running. But when I swam, weight would fall off me.
Which is the opposite of the exercise physiology data, that swimming does not raise core body temperature, therefore you spike appetite after a swim, whereas after a run, your body temperature's up, you've been pounded a little bit, and so your appetite is dulled, and the gravity impact of running is supposed to prompt more fat loss, except for Dave Rossi, because he doesn't enjoy it.
Well, no, I swam as a kid.
Oh, I mean running.
Oh, I don't enjoy running, but yeah, I also swam as a kid.
It didn't work for you because you didn't enjoy it.
Well, yes, but I think it's a little bit more complicated than that. I think there's possibly this placebo effect where I swam as a kid. My body was used to swimming. It has this subconscious memory of this was the activity I did from 5 years old until high school. I was a competitive swimmer. I didn't run at all. I didn't do a lot of those running sports. And so when I swim, there's a lot of physiological familiarity for me that I just tripped on. It wasn't like I love swimming because I really don't like swimming that much, but my body really remembers that and it sheds weight. And I still run because I like to be able to run and have that lung capacity and leg capacity to go run. So I just don't worry about what a couple extra pounds here and there with running. But I guess the point is that there's this placebo where your body will let go of fat when it's comfortable. I mean, let me rephrase that. Sometimes fat is like stored food in the freezer, right? And for a lot of us, your brain has to say, we're comfortable using this for energy. We're okay using this for, and now in some situations, if you're really running really hard or working out really hard or putting yourself under, hormesis, your body can say, shed the weight. We need to shed the weight. We need to lighten our load. Some people's bodies might say, save the calories. We're going to lower the metabolism. We're going to store the fat. We do not want to let this go. We really need this because this is migratory, as the book said. And it's true. It's migratory. What triggers I feel safe, let fat out? Or what triggers I don't feel safe, hold fat in? It depends on the person. For me, swimming and running are two indications for me. When I fast too much, I gain weight. Like my body says, hey, this is too much. Fasting
well,
too much.
Well, that goes back to these energy balance assertions that you can overdo it and then get the undesirable counter response of turning down the other dials. Dr. Herman Ponser, author of Burn, he says, reproduction, repair, growth, and locomotion are a zero-sum game. So if you're over-exercising, you are going to turn down all kinds of other flames and feel more tired, more hungry, more apt to store fat rather than burn it. And I think we're finally unwinding that and learning that this eat less, exercise more suggestion is completely at odds with how our bodies really work. And also, the mindset factor that you're bringing into the story here.
Yeah, I'm only adding, I agree with all that. I'm only adding that what is considered overexerting is different from person to person because of their mind and what their set points are.
Right. And over fasting because you hate it or whatever you're coming to the table with.
Right. You can, like, the point of what, when Brad Kern's body says this is overtraining is way more than what I do. My body's going to be tapped out a lot earlier than yours. And that's just because you're used to it and your mind's okay. And your mind says, I can do this. Now there's some things my mind says, hey, you can do this. And this isn't hard. And this isn't tough for you. And so that overtraining has a lot to do with where you are. Cause you can build up for those points and build slowly and grow where that point is. And you'll never hit that point because your mind is beginning to continually say, I can do more. I can do more. I can do more. This is okay. This is safe. This is comfortable. This is normal. This is where I am. Does that make sense? Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's a big one. Yeah, you're building confidence too. Any fitness enthusiast.
Yeah, that confidence is part of it. It's like this unwritten, it's not conscious confidence. It's subconscious confidence. If we can consciously, amp ourselves up and consciously use logic and reason to say, I'm good at this and I have confidence in this and I can do this. But if the subconscious mind has to believe it, the subconscious mind has to be comfortable with the 20 mile a week runs and say, hey, 20 miles a week is no big deal, right? And for me, it's going to be like, this is hard. 20 miles a week is going to be a stretch. You're going to really You know, consciously, I know I can do it, but I know subconsciously my mind isn't there. The reason why I know that is I can tell I gain weight if I run 20 miles a week. I can just literally see weight pack on. And then I know my subconscious mind doesn't like this. It's not digging this, you know? So I think to lose weight, I think you have to have the power of choice to figure out what works for you. You have to be able to experiment with all kinds of things to say, I have the power of choice. I can choose to do this, and I can choose not to do that, and I can see what happens. And then I can choose to do this, and I can choose to do that, and I can see what happens. And I think it also depends on your goals, because if your goals are, I just want to look good, that's a different goal than I really want to be healthy. Because I make a lot of choices like running, not because I want to look good, but because I want to have a high VO2 max, and I want to be able to backpack and hike 18 miles in one day, and running helps me create that. I'm okay with packing on some weight to be able to do that. That's my goal. If it's vanity, it's something different, you know? If it's autophagy and fasting, that's a different reason than I just want to lose weight, you know?
And I suppose there's probably a different prediction of success due to the nature of your goal. If you just want to lose weight and look good in the bikini versus I want to be healthy, that sounds a little more fragile because the willpower is going to have to keep kicking in since the goal is so superficial, I guess.
Yeah, right. You're not really enjoying the journey of it. You're just like, I don't really want to live this life. I just want to live that bikini for summer. And so then you're constantly throwing yourself into the gym and throwing yourself into certain situations because you're just trying to get the outcome versus, well, you know, there was this quote, and I'm taking it, so I don't want to take credit for it, but this guy says to me, like, if you love to walk, you're going to walk farther than if you just want to walk to the destination. And that's basically what it is with weight loss and health, is that you really better like walking or like what you're doing to get there, because you're going to do more of it than you would if you just want the end game.
Wow. So I guess all of us should be aware that whatever path we embark on, we got to have total buy-in from ourselves in terms of enjoying it. And if there's, and I bet you if you just went through a gym to all the Stairmasters and the treadmills and interviewed everyone, you'd probably get a lot of negative comments like, what are you doing here? Why are you here? Do you like it? Oh, no, yeah. I hate it, but I get to eat more food. You know, you hear all that chatter all the time. I think maybe with like a community running group, they probably all love it. It's their social centerpiece. And therefore, you see CrossFit is another great example where people are just so jazzed to be there every day. And therefore, maybe it's not as stressful as I contend when I see them exercising to extreme, but they absolutely love it. They get off on it. So maybe that dampens some of the potential risk factors.
No, I think it does. And I think it definitely dampens those risk factors. I think when people do some of these activities and they begin to feel tight or they feel their body changing and they like that effect, that can be addictive as well and change their views. I do see very, very out of shape looking people run faster than me in half marathons. And I'm like, whoa, they're super in shape, but they're packing on a lot of body weight. And I just think they must be really stressed. Mm-hmm. Their body is holding weight and yet they're in really good shape. They have, you know, maybe 30% body weight or something, and or 35, and they're whizzing by me. And I'm like, wow, you can be in shape and overweight. I mean, those are two different things.
Absolutely. You can be fit, but not healthy.
Right.
They had amazing research from the Cape Town South Africa Marathon, where they determined that 30% of the participants were outside the healthy body composition. And so it's 30% of the marathon runners were classified as overweight, over fat.
Yeah.
And the World Health Organization identified that 30% of the global population is overweight, over fat. And so if you're on the race course cheering from the sidelines as the runners run through Cape Town, you literally can't discern between the spectators and the participants in a marathon by body composition. So something is wrong with the approach of these endurance runners. And by and large, it's such a they're training in a manner that's so stressful. Even if they might enjoy it and go for that endorphin high over and over, it's possible to do it in a way that's not physically healthy. Same with extreme pursuits of dietary intervention and restrictive dieting.
But other stresses too, like pressure to win the race or pressure to meet a certain time or pressure on social media. I mean, there's more science and there's more knowledge about these types of things than ever before. We have more physiological understanding than the history of our species. Mm. And yet obesity is still higher. There are more diets, more nutrition, and more plans, and yet obesity has never been higher. And we're still missing the boat. It's not diet and exercise. It really isn't. There is something
it's not
that
about
everyone's
diet and exercise, people.
No, it's really not. And I mean, it is in a way that's a component, that's a piece of it. And people say, oh, restrict calories. It's not restricting calories helps, yes. But if you restrict calories too much, and if you have the wrong mindset with respect to food stressors and emotional stressors like relationships or work or money or pressure or self-esteem, that's going to counter, you know, any kind of calorie deficit that you're going to put your body into. And so to me, the obesity epidemic has a lot more to do with stress, environmental stress, and emotional stress. Mm-hmm. Self-esteem, there's a brighter light of comparisons among individuals because of social media than there ever has. And a lot of us have a lot of stress about looking or acting a certain way or being a certain way. And that fuels a lot of physiological changes in our body. And, you know, there's a lot of holistic approaches to weight loss that really focus on the mental aspect and the mindset aspect and the choices to live a healthy lifestyle. And I look at lifestyle as thoughts, emotions, food, activities, relationships. Your lifestyle will have a corresponding body. That's just the way it is. And most of us spend a lot of time trying to have a lifestyle and have a different body, right? Mm-hmm. We're always doing shortcuts and that's mm-hmm. not going to work. And it goes to all of those things, mental, relationships, how we treat people, how we treat ourselves, nutrition, exercise, all those things are lifestyle. And the combination of that cumulative lifestyle will create the body that the corresponding body, end of story. And you can't short circuit that. And Ben Greenfield is a perfect example. He looks like the results of his lifestyle. He looks a little hard. Okay, he does a lot of hard stuff. He looks a little bit like he's aging a little bit quicker than maybe he should because he's doing some really tough stuff. He has, and not that I couldn't change if he does a couple of things, but you know, his body corresponds to his lifestyle. Same thing with you and same thing with me and everybody else. The cumulative lifestyle, not just health and nutrition or not just fitness and nutrition.
Mm. Right. And so in your case, if listeners didn't catch previous shows where you talked about your incredible weight loss transformation, you've referenced it a lot. So I want to put it out there and then ask you, like, what was the trigger that made it all happen for you and sustain it? And where let's start at the point where you, whatever, one day looked in the mirror and saw, I forgot how much you lost. It was a lot and you've kept it off for
a long
time. It was like
50 or 60 pounds, yeah.
Oof.
You know, I didn't change a lot about my diet. I didn't drink for a long time.
It wasn't a big deal. I just decided one day in my mind I was going to shed 50.
Well, I mean, I was injured. I was supposed to have back surgery. I really couldn't do a lot. I was really overweight. I had dessert every night, though. You know, I didn't eat a lot of fried food or fast food. I didn't drink alcohol at that time, so those were not factors in my weight loss. I ate relatively healthy food, but a lot of it was one. I changed my relationship, and I changed jobs. I shut my company down, and I realized I was really unhappy for a long time, and I really spent a lot of time trying to figure out what happiness was and how to find happiness, internal happiness. So if you need something external to be happy, like alcohol or food or a relationship or an activity or even an exercise, if you need something external to be happy, then you're reliant on that external activity or the multiple external activities. And when they're not available to you, then your happiness is based on circumstance and situations. And so I began to really focus on inner happiness and how to find happiness inside of me, without needing something external. And the biggest thing I learned is that you really can't find happiness internally. The only thing you can do is begin to remove the things that make you unhappy. And so when you systematically learn and practice how to remove the things that make you unhappy, like self-esteem or comparison and just self-judgment and money and all these other stresses, I began to find happiness through the removal of the things that made me unhappy. And that removed cortisol responses. It removed insulin responses. And I didn't do a lot for my body to begin to find the weight that it should have been at. Now, I was 230 pounds at that time. I graduated high school at 200 pounds, 205. The heaviest when I was an athlete in college was 215. So I'm like 230 now. And I'm like, oh, I just want to get back to like 215. That'd be great. And, you know, I had this back injury, so I really couldn't do a lot. I started swimming again, which I couldn't do flip turns because I had two slip discs in my back. I needed to have surgery. Began to walk. I began to lift my upper body only. And the rule was, don't do anything hard. The second it gets hard, stop. The second I got bored at the gym, I left. And I also had a rule, no more watching TV. So I'd get home after working out for like 20 minutes because it was hard and I left. And I get home, okay, now what am I going to do? No TV. So I go for a walk, get about 10 minutes out. I'm bored. I'm going back. Okay, 20 minutes, I'm back. I get home, okay, now what am I going to do? Okay, I'll clean my closet, you know? Okay, now what am I going to do? And the next day, I'm like, you know, I was so bored after only working out 20 minutes. I'm going to work out longer. So I got 25 minutes, you know, 30 minutes. Okay, I'm bored. And I left. So it was a series of not doing anything tough, but sticking to some basic principles like I'm not going to watch TV. I'm going to work on inner happiness. So I would read and I'm not going to exercise and do anything tough. And then I eventually canceled the surgery. I didn't have the surgery. I got to about 185 pounds, doing really nothing that crazy. You know, I'd work out, you know, every day, a little bit here, 20 minutes there, 30 minutes there. I'd walk with a, you know, a numb leg prepping for surgery. Mm-hmm. I wasn't running. I wasn't ice bathing. I wasn't fasting. It was a very slow, methodical approach to inner happiness that created it for me.
And so in practical terms, if we had to sit and answer to the laboratory researchers, when you did sit down to mealtimes or snacking, did some of those habits just change automatically? Like you weren't watching TV, so that means you didn't have a pint of ice cream to shovel in while you were watching TV or anything like that that you identify?
You know, well, I meditated a lot too. And, you know, meditation for me was very difficult. I would almost throw up with nausea, but I really believed the medical journals that I read about meditation. So I would sit and I would do it and I would fight off the anxiety and I would fight off the difficulty of trying to calm my mind down. And so when I did feel a biological urge, eat that, you deserve it. I just meditated in the morning that I fought off anxiety and I fought off vomiting. I can fight off a snack right now. Like it gave me that power of choice to say, I'm used to saying no to these things and I want to say no. This is my choice and I don't need food for happiness. I don't, if I just eat this snack, I'm literally just going to do it to make myself feel happy. And I don't really want to find happiness through external things. I want to find happiness through internal things. So when I began to stop using food as something that created happiness, the game changed. Hmm. The types of food I ate changed. It changed incredibly.
Food for nourishment.
Yeah.
And also to enjoy, you know, a nicely cooked meal or a restaurant experience.
Yeah.
But that's different than trying to set the record at the buffet, which I think a lot of us are adopting that mindset where we want to go slam the greatest food and, you know.
Yeah, it was a very pleasurable response. It comes with, oh, I'm so full. You know, there's a very pleasurable response physiologically with that. It hits tryptophan and all kinds of other responses that make us feel pleased being full or pleased. And people say, oh, I made the choice to eat all that food. Yeah, you did. But if your goal was not to eat it, then you didn't. Because a lot of people say, oh, I chose that. Yeah, you did choose it. But you really weren't in control and you really weren't conscious. Because if your goal is truly to lose weight or be fit or be healthy or look good in a bikini, if that's your goal and you did something counter to that goal, even if you chose it, you weren't in control. You can't intentionally sabotage yourself.
Right. And so what happens to those occasions where we're facing that war between our beliefs, our values, our stated goals, the choices to be healthy, and the temptation when they wheel the dessert cart over and you're all of a sudden having a negotiation in your mind?
You're asking yourself the wrong questions, number one. And number two, you haven't developed the practice or the ability to say no to bodily urges. And that's practice. I mean, that just takes practice. And I equate my experience to learning how to meditate, because I literally would get so much anxiety, I would almost vomit because my mind just would not stop. And my mind and my body wanted me to go save me and go make a phone call or go pay some bills or go get to work. And I would force myself not to go save myself, or what my mind thought was saving myself. And that created a lot of, you know, urges that I learned to hold at bay. And so that practice developed into the practice of saying no to bodily urges. And now, as an athlete, you know this. Your body urges you often to say, stop running, I'm tired. Your body often says you can't go any further. And you might say, no, I kind of can't. It says, well, you didn't sleep that well last night. Yeah, I know, but I've ran this hard when I haven't slept that much before. But you didn't have a big breakfast. Yeah, but I've ran this hard, not sleeping that well in the past, and not having a big breakfast. Yeah, but you need to get somewhere by 5. Okay, you're right. Maybe I should stop. You know, your mind begins to trip you up. You see what I'm saying? But you don't have to listen to any of those voices. And that's what makes great athletes great, is they don't respond to those urges. They don't respond to that debate. They just turn that debate off and they focus on what they want to do and what they want to achieve.
Yeah, that really strikes me as my experience with my morning exercise routine, which I'm enthusiastically talking about all the time and just launched the online course. But it is transcended from something that I judge as a hassle or too difficult or making me a superstar, you know, positively judging it or negatively. And now I just do it. And so I don't need to pat myself on the back or do anything theatrical to celebrate, nor do I need to have this conversation in my mind like, oh, I don't feel like it today because my legs are stiff and sore. And it's really been an amazing experience for me to reach this other level where it's in the same category as brushing one's teeth. So usually we don't need to summon motivation or willpower to hit the teeth, even if we're staggering in at 2 a.m, exhausted from whatever jet lag or a night out, we're still going to do it without complaining about it, without judging it to be a hassle, is what I'm trying to get at. And when you can get to that point, then you're just, you know, it's truly
easy.
Yeah. And I think people don't understand, like they'll ask you, you're kidding, Dave, you never have a bowl of ice cream. Don't you miss it or whatever? And maybe you do once in a while when you're in a different mood or a celebratory state. But I feel like it's been positioned as a sacrifice to be a healthy person, when an actual healthy person or a runner who runs a lot of miles and runs by your house every day, they love it. It's no sacrifice.
Well, I think you said two things there. One, I think morning regimens are really powerful and really important because the body muses the soul. The body muses the spirit. The body begins to tell us, we train our body to make it easier for the mind or the spirit to give us our power. So that's like, I run 1 mile and it's tough. Okay. And the next time I run a mile, 1.2 miles. Okay. And the next time I run 1.3, I'm beginning to train the body. I'm beginning to use the body as a muse to give, you use the word confidence, to give the spirit more confidence or more power to say, You can do more. You can do more. Look, you did more yesterday. You did more the day before. Look where you've come from. Instead of look where you haven't gone, start saying, look where you've come from. Okay, it's called, Vishon calls it back gapping versus forward gapping, right? Look where I started. I started with 1 mile. Now I'm at 2. I can do better. So those morning regimens are so powerful in training the body as a muse to give the spirit and all these mental things I'm talking about the confidence and the power to make more choices. For me, it was meditation. I just did it. I just slugged it out. And then I said, hey, I could do that. I could do this. Okay. So those body things are really important, but they really need to be used to transcend the body. And the other thing you said is about, you kind of said living an ascetic life. Do I eat ice cream once in a while? Yeah, sometimes I do. You know, there is still physiology in me. I am still human. I tend to have more and more power. Like my kids bought ice cream from Crumble Cookie, if you're familiar with Crumble. And there's like the Crumble Cookie ice cream and you look at the label and it's like, I can't pronounce any of these ingredients. Yeah. So I really don't want that. But hey, here is some Breyers milk, sugar, you know. Okay, I can probably have a couple bites of this. It's like I have that power in those moments to really dictate and have no, I can leave that ice cream forever and never eat this stuff with chemicals in it. It's like, and I'm not deprived. I don't feel deprived. There's no part of my life where I feel I'm deprived. And the people who live with me would never say I live an ascetic life because I don't eat ice cream that much anymore. And once in a while I do. I'm still human. I will still get a dopamine and serotonin rush from having some ice cream. And sometimes my body needs it and that's okay. Serotonin is important to sleep. Sometimes I need it. And that's okay. And I don't feel guilty about it. I don't have to have any rules, you know, but I do want to build my power to make choices. And I want to use that power for more than just what I eat and what I do with my time, but what I say and how I behave and how I treat people and how I treat myself. That power can transcend food and nutrition and exercise.
Yeah, I guess when you're mindful and you know that you're kicking into an indulgent answering to your bodily urges, it makes it that much more special. And so you really can have a celebratory experience and you've chosen the very best ice cream and you've driven across town. And I've set this example where, you know, there's one thing to have on your shopping list, some shit food that you become habituated to because it gives you an instant dopamine rush, or, you know, drive across town when someone's visiting and you're going to show them the homemade ice cream shop that has a line around the corner on a hot summer evening. And you go and you look at all the flavors and everything's handmade and it's the very best in the category, which is not a nutritious category, but that's a huge
made
difference.
With care,
from, yeah. I think you're a slave to the consumerism and the manipulation. Dr. Robert Lustig calls it the hacking of the American mind in his best-selling book. And it was a fantastic expose on how, you know, the gambling industry, the video gamers, the pornography, the peddlers of sugar and alcohol and prescription drugs, street drugs, you know, they're preying upon our weaknesses rather than us being in control and, you know, deciding that you're going to succumb to a certain biological urge because you're going to enjoy yourself sure as heck.
Yeah, I know. People manipulate the body in all sorts of ways to do what they want it to do. I mean, certainly the food industry manipulates our mind to think that we need these things. Certainly advertisements sells a lifestyle that we want and we want to have. And it's taken away our ability to make choices. I mean, I have to be honest with you. One of the primary reasons why I jump in a cold tub is not how long I go in. Sometimes it is, but initially it's because I tell myself that I can. I strengthen my I choose muscle because every time I open the tub of ice, and I like the most ice I can find in there to make it as tough of a mountain to climb as possible. And I go, I'm going to get in there because I can. My body is like, you know, it's going to hurt. And they go, that's okay. Just getting in is the spiritual response. It's having control over my urges. Same thing with fasting. A lot of reason why I fast is to say, I want to be able to choose how to eat. Now, when you build up that power, you are telling food to take a back seat. You are telling food that I have control over it now. Mm. I can say no to it. And you are beginning to say, I don't need food for pleasure, and I can restrict food and feel a little bit of pain. And when you have that power, I'm at a party and there's nothing but gluten, and I'm not allergic, I'm a little intolerant. Gluten's very synthetic, it's very GMO, it's not good for you. It crosses the brain-blood barrier because it's so synthetic with its GMO properties. Wheat Belly is a great book that talks about this. But when I see everything but gluten, I can go, I've fasted this long before, happy not to eat. When people say, oh, we didn't realize that you don't eat this food, I don't care. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about me. I'm cool. I can just eat later. Like,
I'm
never,
so sorry. Yeah.
I never need anyone to make a special meal for me, because if there isn't something there that I can eat, I just write it out and say, no, I'm not going to eat. Mm-hmm. And I have that power where food doesn't provide happiness for me anymore. It's not a happiness drug. It's just something that I've been able to learn how to control. And again, meditation has giving me the ability to say no to those bodily urges.
That is an awesome summation right there. The food no longer has the power. That's how you lose 50 pounds and keep it off. Dave Rossi killing it as usual. Tell us about The Imperative Habit, the wonderful book that has a lot of guidance for the things you've talked about, but putting it into a focused program.
Well, yeah. So the book I wrote quickly was, I read lots of books to learn these things. I didn't invent these things. I learned them. I read them. But what I learned is the books that I read, you needed to read a lot of them to aggregate not only the knowledge, but a path or a practice. And so I wrote my book essentially to give people the aggregate of what people need to do or should try to do or try to practice to learn how to make happiness something internal and not something external. And what are those seven particular habits, things to practice to convert to habit that you say to yourself every day? You know, don't fear the outcome, accept things for what they don't judge, respond with love and compassion. I mean, these habits that you tell yourself in any situation when you feel down or you have low self-esteem and say, habit one, don't fear the outcome. Oh, habit seven, have faith. Oh, habit five, you know, believe in happiness. And so pulling them out when I feel down or when something happens to me, I wrote the book to give people that same roadmap to find internal happiness and give them more power not to be a slave to external happiness.
Remove the stuff that doesn't make you happy, and underneath you will find our natural happiness. I love it. Dave Rossi, thank you so much.
Yeah.
People, go get the book on Amazon. It's an easy read. It's life-changing. Not that much to ask. You're going to absolutely love it. It's called The Imperative Habit by Dave Rossi.
Brad, great to see you. Thank you. I hope I answered your questions related to that podcast, which was wonderful, by the way, and I would advise anyone to watch it. So hopefully I gave you my spin.
Fantastic. Love it. The new angle. Thanks for listening, everybody. Da-da-da-da.
Thank you for listening to the show. I love sharing the experience with you and greatly appreciate your support. Please email podcast@bradventures.com with feedback, suggestions, and questions for the Q&A shows. Subscribe to our email list at bradkearns.com for a weekly blast about the published episodes and a wonderful bi-monthly newsletter edition with informative articles and practical tips for all aspects of healthy living. You can also download several awesome free ebooks when you subscribe to the email list. And if you could go to the trouble to leave a 5 or 5-star review with Apple Podcasts or wherever else you listen to the shows, that would be super incredibly awesome. It helps raise the profile of the BRAD podcast and attract new listeners. And did you know that you can share a show with a friend or loved one by just hitting a few buttons in your player and firing off a text message? My awesome podcast player called Overcast allows you to actually record a soundbite excerpt from the episode you're listening to and fire it off with a quick text message. Thank you so much for spreading the word. And remember, be rad.